Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. You know, this weekend, we're all going to be hanging out with our families. We're probably going to be barbecuing if the weather's good. What's the weather? I heard the weather in New York is going to be crap. Is that for the whole weekend? The whole weekend? Are you serious? The whole week?
Well, stand by. Your weather girl, Linda, will now check.
Oh, you start.
Let's take a look.
No. No, let's take a look.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. It looks like overcast with a chance of rain for Saturday and Sunday, and rain tomorrow and Friday, and
oh my God,
on Monday.
What am I taking off for? What's
Enjoy
the point?
Enjoy your vacation.
Well, I'm just going to get out of here then. I'll just jump on JetBlue and swing on down. I'll go somewhere. That's ridiculous. Why is it every day I take off, the few days I take off, this is what happens?
I'm going to use Upside and book you some travel.
Look, the only thing I'm going to say is we're going to have barbecues. We're going to eat steak. We're going to have hot dogs and hamburgers and cheeseburgers and pickles and onions and tomatoes and salad and family. And some of you are going to go in a swimming pool with that disgusting chlorine that stays on your body for days. And, you know, we're going to have that all coming up just some point this weekend. Just remember what Memorial Day is about. The reason you're free to do this is because of the sacrifice of so many others, and I just like to remember that. You know, it's funny. In coming up in our later in the program today, at the bottom of the next half hour, our friend of the program, Karen Vaughn, is here, and she's the mother of a fallen Navy SEAL, Aaron Vaughn. And she and I were just talking, and her son, and look, to become a Navy SEAL is such an amazing accomplishment in one's life. And we're just sitting there talking, and she's like so many other people that come up to me that know that they're trying to boycott the show, and we know what a boycott is about. Boycott's about basically pressuring advertisers to leave your show for the purpose of silencing your conservative voice. And I've told you for years what's going on here. I told you that every single conservative host on radio that you like and you listen to is being recorded every second of every day by these losers in their bathrobes or in their underwear, you know, in their basements because they don't have anything else to do in life, being paid to do it in the hopes that we conservatives say one word, one sentence, one phrase that they don't like and that they can then use to attack our advertisers in the hopes that our advertisers will bail out, the show becomes financially unfeasible, and that the host gets fired. Because liberals do not believe in freedom of speech. I call it liberal fascism. You see it on college campuses all the time. Yilo, Milo Yiannopoulos, you know, or, you know, no, not Yiannopoulos. It's Yiannopoulos, all right? And
Ann Coulter. I can't believe you called me out on air for that.
Yeah, you say it in my ear, and you expect that I'm not going to call you out on it. I'm sorry, you don't get
it. I just got done doing the weather. Now you're going to bust me on that.
All right, so all these people are calling me, but friends of mine, and my friends know me all of these years. I am not a worrier. I have a perspective on life. And I was just talking to Karen. We'll talk about it later in the show today. She lost her Navy SEAL son, and she is an amazing woman. And I say, I think that's the one thing in life, and in a roundabout way, I mentioned this last night, that I don't think I can handle. In my life, I think that would be what set me over the edge. You lose your kid. It just is so unnatural and so hard and so difficult and so tough. And she actually says, she comes up to me and she goes, I'm so sorry reading about what you're going through. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, can we have some perspective here? Yeah, liberals for my entire career have tried to destroy me. And now they're just pushing harder than they've ever pushed. And, you know, after all the years of recording 3 hours a day, and after all the years of being on Hannity, all those years, they have not been able to take me out. And so now they're just doing it for the sake of doing it. Well, we got O'Reilly this way, and we went after Rush this way, and we went after Beck this way, and Dr. Laura this way. And, you know, I've always said to you that this is going to happen. And if this is the worst thing that happens in my life, that I have to deal with it and fight for the right to do this radio program and my TV show every day, and I can't have perspective of the mother of a fallen Navy SEAL. Imagine you have a son who goes through the rigor and is one of the few that's able to make it and becomes a Navy SEAL, and how absolutely proud you are of them for their great accomplishment, and you lose that child. That's tough. That's hard. You know what? People that have kids and they lost their job and they can't be their kid, that's hard. You know, people that are, you know, there's so many, you get in an accident, your mom and dad have a heart attack over anywhere, you just got diagnosed with cancer, you have a sick child. I mean, I don't understand. One of the things she says in the book is how to raise strong kids in a world of weakness. Now think about it. We've gotten so pathetically PC and weak, and I mean weak, that every kid has to have a trophy because we might hurt their widow feelings because they don't get a trophy. So we don't keep score, as if the kids aren't going to keep score on their own. It's ridiculous. You know, it's, you know, not taking risks in life and living life. Yeah, is it unfortunate? Is it annoying? Is it frustrating? Is it, are there people gleeful on the left that they might get Hannity too, meaning me? I don't like to talk in the third person. Yeah, there are people excited about the idea. And I'll tell you what it's mostly rooted in is politics. It's mostly rooted in the destroy Trump media, the destroy Trump left, you know, liberal fascists, that they can't accept that there are Americans that have different perspectives and points of view than they do. And by the way, the great lie that this group is out there saying is, oh, this isn't a boycott. We've only put every advertiser that's on Hannity shows. Okay, that's really cute, but we know what you're doing. It's just a lie. And by the way, I have a lot of information on that group, but at the end of the day, this is, and I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm always honest with this audience, This is a kill shot. This is a shot to take me out of radio and TV and get me fired. This is it. They want this show done. They want me off of Fox. They want Fox done. Now, the only reason I'm telling you, and I've been tweeting out about it, is that so you are aware of what's going on. And I'm going to tell you something. It's not about me personally. It's not. You know, I'm going to be honest. I can go on with my life. I have businesses I've never discussed. I have a lot to do in my life. I don't take a lot of vacation. But I'd like to keep doing it because this is my passion. I feel like I'm filling a void and a need at a time where there's unprecedented attacks against our president and our country and our values and what we voted for in November. I'm a natural fighter, and I'm going to fight, and I'm going to try and stay in the fight. But make no mistake about it, I'm not going to sugarcoat what's going on. This is a kill shot. This is to destroy me. This is to silence my voice. This is about getting me off the air. That's just a fact. I accept it for what it is, and I'll tell you, I don't want any of you out there to feel sorry for me at all. You want to feel sorry for somebody, go hug a person in the neighborhood that lost their kid in a conflict or a war or a battle, or somebody that's battling cancer, or somebody's kid who's battling cancer, or a family that is struggling, maybe financially. Go help them. You don't need to help Sean Hannity, but if they're successful, this country is so far worse off because it's never going to end. I've always said, you ever hear me say when Colbert said the crap he said about the president? You ever hear me say about Bill Maher? How many times have I said Bill Maher is good for America? I hate Bill Maher because he says anything he wants, even a vile, foul, despicable, disgusting, disgraceful comment about incest with Ivanka and her father, the president. And I said, I will not be a part of a campaign or a boycott. I believe in freedom of speech, at least on pure and consistent. These people are liberal fascists. And I kept saying, I won't be like them. I can't tell you how this is going to end. I'm just going to tell you that I will fight my hardest. And thanks to all of you for your support. I don't have this microphone or that camera every night without all of you. And I'm very appreciative of every single minute of my life that I've had this. I never took it for granted, and I don't now.
Has liberal tolerance stifled free speech? Is Islam a religion of peace? IssuesETC.net, a podcast for social conservatives. Are children the real casualties of the sexual revolution? And is there a relationship between the civil rights movement of yesterday and the pro-life movement of today? When you surf the web tonight, visit IssuesETC.net. Listen to what you want, when you want. IssuesETC.net.
You know what I've got to realize in life? Linda's going to laugh at this. My capacity to deal with the punches of life are far greater than so many other people. Look at Sunshine every day. She looks at me like, you know, like I'm a puppy dog that gets run over, and she thinks that this is the worst thing in the world. Will you please put perspective in her life and tell her that this is not the worst thing in the world? And I'm getting notes from the nicest people that know me, and they're weeping. I'm not dead yet. I'm just saying it's a kill shot for my career.
But isn't it nice to know just how crowded your funeral will be? There's something comforting in that, I think. And I've always wished that there was a way that I could see who was actually going to show up.
Seriously, now we're going to go from the kill shot and my career being over, and now you want me dead.
You're
physically
not dead. Your career is not over.
Not yet.
But it would be nice.
Not yet.
To know who would arrive.
I don't know who's going to arrive.
Well, now you're getting a little, you know, it's a little preview.
Oh, you're freaking me out. The other thing I hate in life is death. I don't think I could ever come.
Should I tell you how I eulogize?
Oh, you better. Anyone cries at my funeral, I'm going to come back and haunt them.
I would never cry. It would mess up my mascara.
I would haunt them. Bring a bottle of booze and play Florida Georgia Line and throw a party.
Do I get to dance on top of the coffin?
Yes.
Or is it open casket?
No open casket. No way. That's gross. I don't know why my family did that. All you remember is that, not the life they lived. We'll continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. Anything else you want to say to me at this point? Anything else you want to say at my funeral? You know, just because they're trying to destroy my career. I mean, let's just pile on and say, at Hannity's funeral, we're going to do this. Listen to me. I've had the best life, more than I've ever dreamed of. Beyond anything I ever dreamed would come true. And God has blessed me beyond anything that I deserve. And I believe that with all my heart, mind, body, and soul. And I am not at all worried or concerned that the left is trying to destroy my career with a kill shot. It's predictable as the day is long. It is the way they are today. I've been warning about liberal fascism for years. It is the environment that we have worked in my entire career for the most part, except it's accelerating in terms of its intensity. The left wants to destroy the Fox News channel, wants to destroy every talk radio host in the country. They want a monopoly so that they can lie, distort, propagandize, advance collusion, Russia, 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 Trump, conspiracies without anybody calling them out. They want to be able to impeach, take down the president. They want as much collateral damage as possible. And that means anybody that likes the president, anybody that works for the president, anybody that supports the president. And they are more insane, more intense, more off the rails than they've ever been before. And none of this surprises me. None of this shocks me. And none of it impacts my thinking. I'm going to come in every single day at work, and I'm going to do the job that I promised you in this audience that I am going to do, as long as you bless me with this microphone. To be perfectly blunt, they can have no impact if you stay with me. And if you don't want me, honestly, you have that choice every day. I choose not to watch Stephen Colbert, but I also chose not to be a part of the Boycott Stephen Colbert. What was the name of the Boycott Colbert? It was trending on Twitter for a while, and people were asking me to join. And I said, no, I don't engage in boycotts. I believe in free speech. And frankly, it's not that much effort for me to take my remote control and hit the on-off button or hit the up-down button and find something else because I've got 400,000 million channels. I don't have to watch anything. And what I try to do in my career is I try to earn your listenership and viewership every single solitary day by doing the best show I can possibly do. I've explained the circumstances under which all of us work in this business. And the fact that if you haven't figured out they're trying to take out the Fox News channel and talk radio because it is the one opposition voice in the country and they can't stand even a single opposition voice, then I don't know what else to tell you. It is real. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that there's no chance that they can be successful here because they absolutely can. And I've seen it happen before. And it's remarkable to me that there are no liberals out there that have come out and said, this is wrong. This is not who we are. We are champions of freedom of speech, even speech that we don't like. You know, liberals often claim they have a monopoly on compassion on women. Okay, Hillary was the woman's candidate. Yeah, okay. Why'd you take money from all these countries that abuse women? And they seem to have bought your silence because you don't criticize the fact that men tell women how to dress, that women can't drive, and that women can't travel abroad, and women in some countries can't be seen outside their own homes without a male relative. They're the champion of gay and lesbian rights. I didn't hear Hillary or any Democrats come out and say, oh, what they're doing in this country, would you accept money from a country that murders gays and lesbians because they're gay and lesbian? And there have been people that have disagreed with me over the years. Hannity, you don't support changing the definition of marriage. All right, we have a political disagreement, frankly, minor, because I'm libertarian at this point in my life and I've been for decades. I don't really care what you do in your private life. And here's a little itsy bitsy secret. Nobody cares what you do in your private life because we're all wrapped up in ourselves. And the idea that, you know, but Sean Hannity's the guy that's been screaming probably the loudest in the country that this atrocity, this evil in our time's got to stop. And I've seen enough videos of gays and lesbians to being thrown off roofs and hung because of that. No, Hillary took money from those countries. You know, the same thing. Oh, we are the most compassionate and open as it relates to religion, and that's why we won't say radical Islamic terrorism. Yeah, okay, well, what about the countries you take money from that persecute Christians and Jews, and you can't build the temple and you can't build the church? Liberals are phony. You know, this whole notion that they're so open-minded and so accepting and that they're the advocates of freedom of speech, it's just the opposite is true. This is liberal fascism. Ann Coulter cannot speak at Berkeley. Yilo Yiannopoulos cannot speak at Berkeley. I don't know of any instance who's speaking at the City of New York graduation. You know, this woman, Linda Sarsour, what is her background? I forget off the top of my head. I mean, she is...
She's Sharia compliant. She works with the Islamic ISIS. She is completely anti-Semitic.
Now, there's been articles written about it, and people have talked about it.
Service is on a Jewish holiday. Pamela Geller is actually protesting today.
Is there any other person out there, conservative, that's protesting or try to stop the funding? Conservatives are usually too busy working. That's not how we roll. I believe in freedom of speech. You know, here's an interesting thought for you. If liberals really, really cared about freedom of speech and they're the champions of the free and the open exchange of ideas and ideals and opinion, you would think they would stand up to liberal colleges. Do you know the birthplace of the free speech movement is out in Berkeley, where they're now suppressing conservative speech? Do you know how insane that is? You know, if you understood the ramifications of all, what do they just want? One group think value idea? And that, God forbid, you say something that they don't like. They've got George Soros money and a Hillary Clinton-founded group to take out Sean Hannity. Okay, is the country better off because you're able to disagree with somebody politically and even find their comments irreverent or whatever description you want to, but to target to get them silenced? Because that's what's going on. Now, I don't say this as somebody. I would think that they would be true to their ideals. Here's what I'm trying to understand. You know, there never was an instance that I have seen of Hillary or any prominent Democratic woman that spoke out and said, what is being said about Melania Trump is awful and sexist and wrong. What, they can't transcend their political prism for 5 minutes to say that Melania Trump should not be, the things that are said about her should not be said? Did they ever say, and I'm not saying fire Bill Maher, I've said Bill Maher's good for America because he's so politically incorrect. He says everything he wants, and I say to people, turn the dial or shut your TV off, because I believe in freedom. I'm a true champion and have been for years. Go back to his politically incorrect days. Bill Maher has said it was people like me and Rush Limbaugh that stood up for him when liberals did not. And he hates me, but he recognizes the truth that his own liberal comrades are the worst when it comes to freedom of speech. They don't get offended. So he makes a so-called joke about incest and Ivanka Trump and the president of the United States. And Sean Hannity says he won't be a part of a boycott because Sean Hannity believes in freedom of speech. Oh, it would be nice if there was some reciprocity, but I bet you Bill Maher would support me. I actually believe if he realized that there was an effort, kill shot, take me out, get me fired, he probably would. Most liberals would not. You know, where is Hillary and Pelosi and Feinstein and Boxer? And, you know, think of every problem. Where is now and the head of Cecile Richards, the head of Planned Parenthood? Where are they saying that this line has been crossed with women? It was always the Republican war on women. Republicans, racist, sexist, homophobic, misogynistic, you know, xenophobic, Islamophobic. You know, all these names, all these checklists that you now have to, you know, fall in line or you're going to be subject to a career death warrant. It's just the environment we're living in. It is the great hypocritical age that we're in. It is political correctness run amok. And if there's one thing that I'm learning in all of this is, where's Rachel Maddow saying, don't, if they could do that to Hannity, can't they do that to me? Or Lawrence O'Donnell? Or Don Lemon? Or Anderson Cooper? You know something? I could, let's say they're successful. Let's say Fox caves. Wouldn't it be the first time? Let's say they do, and I have my radio show. Can I not start boycotts and change my position and try to silence liberal cable voices? And let's say they were able to take me out. And then I turn and flip the tables on them, and I ask every conservative, everybody, fine, they're going to do it to us. Let's go back and do it to them. I couldn't in good conscience do it because it's not who I am and it's not what I believe. And it would make me a hypocrite like they are. But think about it. If liberals can do it to conservatives all the time, there could be pressure brought to bear on HBO. Well, maybe not HBO. Well, but actually, yeah. People start saying, screw it, I don't want HBO anymore. Or CBS. You know, want me to post tonight a list of Rachel Maddow's advertisers and Lawrence O'Donnell's advertisers and Anderson Cooper's advertisers? And I like Don Lemon. I'm not going to mention him. Or any, or what's that? The guy on at 8 o'clock on MSNBC, whoever he is, his advertisers, who cares what they say? I don't care. I don't watch it. I don't. It's not my cup of tea. It's just not what I'm interested in. So I flip the dial. I don't try to get him off the air, and I never would try to get him off the air. Just the opposite. You know how Lou Dobbs and I became friends? I called him when he was under fire and people wanted to fire him. He remembers it to this day. He was at CNN at the time. And I said, hang in there. I said, I'm sorry you're going through this. You know how many times I've made those calls to my friends in talk radio, many of whom end up getting fired anyway? And then you can't get more any jobs because there's just not as many jobs as used to be available in this industry. So where are these liberals defending me? It's never going to happen. And I'm just making a point. I'll never do it back to them because it's not in my heart and soul. But I bet you I could do it successfully. If they succeed at me, taking me out with this kill shot, with Soros money and Hillary's organization that helped build this organization, they take me out. They put my advertisers up to attack them. And for people to go out there and silence my voice, if they're successful, and I did the same to them, you don't think that we could mobilize conservatives and put pressure on CBS and HBO and NBC and MSNBC and any other network? We could put enormous pressure on them, probably a lot more than they're capable of ever putting on me. But I'm not going to do that. You know why? Because it goes against every fiber of my being to stifle the liberty and the freedom. This Memorial Day will remember that those that gave the ultimate sacrifice so I can do a radio show like this and not be taken out because of my political views. To all of my friends, and all of you who have been supportive, and all of you who have reached out to me, and all of our advertisers, especially you, because I know you're inundated. By the way, there's probably about 60 people. It's not what you think it is when they hit you with thousands of emails. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for understanding what this is about. Mostly it's about politics. Anybody close to the president, likes the president, says one nice thing about the president, needs to be stopped, especially before 2018 and 2020. Thank you for standing strong under enormous pressure. I don't know how this is all going to end. And I can only tell you that I'm not worried how it's all going to end. And I just have a belief, a faith that if this is the worst thing in my life, I don't have cancer. My kids are healthy. I live in the greatest country God gave man. I have friends that I didn't even know I had. But it's not good for the country. Not me. It's not about me. This is not good for the country, what they are doing.
Now, I would assume that there is a process, a protocol under which the intelligence community goes through if they seek to unmask a U.S. person's name.
That's correct.
Have you ever requested that a U.S. person's name be unmasked?
Yes, I have.
Have you also either approved or denied requests of others that a U.S. person's name be unmasked?
I don't recall in my tenure at CIA any decision on unmasking for someone else coming up to my level. It would have been, that decision would have been made at a lower level within the agency.
Are you aware of any requests within the community that were denied?
I do not. I didn't have visibility into requests that were being made across the government, so I don't recall one that I was denied.
Do you recall any U.S. ambassadors asking that names be unmasked?
I don't know. Maybe it's ringing a vague bell, but I could not answer with any confidence.
Do you remember what your last day on the job was at the CIA? What was the date?
It was noon on January 20th when I gave up my responsibilities as director of CIA.
On either January 19th or up till noon on January the 20th, did you make any unmasking request?
I do not believe I did.
So you did not make any request on the last day that you were employed?
No, I was not in the agency on the last day I was employed. I definitely know that on the last day I was employed, I definitely did not make such a request.
It's a really simple question. Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign that I was concerned about because of known Russian efforts to suborn such individuals. And it raised questions in my mind, again, whether or not the Russians were able to gain the cooperation of those individuals. I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know. But I know that there was a sufficient basis of information and intelligence that required further investigation by the Bureau to determine whether or not U.S. persons were actively conspiring, colluding with Russian officials.
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Can you say definitively that there was collusion? There were people affiliated with the Trump campaign who were working with Russians to time the release of damaging information about Hillary Clinton that had been hacked either from John Podesta or the DNC?
I don't think we can say anything definitively at this point.
Have you seen anything, either intelligence briefings, through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
you've
made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking.
The hacking.
On the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that
had. But the collusion, though.
No. We have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. There you have it again, and that is, we have the former CIA director Brennan talking about, I unmasked people. And then, of course, we have John Solomon and Sarah Carter talking about surveillance and unmasking and intelligence leaking, an unprecedented percentages increase in 2015 and 2016. A presidential election cycle where it went up 350%. Now, either the threats against our country justified the use of our intelligence community that they would actually surveil Americans without warrants, or pick them up incidentally and then unmask them, and in some cases even leak the intelligence, a violation of the Espionage Act, or this is a ruse and they're using the cover of intelligence gathering for the purpose of spying on an opposition party and on people and Americans that they don't like. And then, of course, we have the montage that goes on and on and on. You have thousands of hours of TV time, barrels and barrels and barrels of ink and, computer postings about how Russia colluded with Trump. And you hear every Democrat themselves saying no evidence. The huge, great conspiracy theory lie that has been advanced and perpetrated on the American people. Now, if it turns out that they ever find any evidence, I'm willing to listen to it, if it turns out that way. On the other hand, if it doesn't, they've got a big problem on their hands, the biggest media scandal in the history of the country by far. And for example, if it ever turned out that, maybe there really were people disgruntled and frustrated by the collusion the lying, the manipulation, and the outright fixing of a campaign in favor of one candidate over another. And it came from within, not from Russia, with Trump working with Russia. I mean, we just don't know the answers yet. And as I said, I am going to continue investigating, and my goal is always to get to the truth. That's what we do on this program. Joining us now, Chris Tanto Paranto. He's one of the Benghazi heroes, and he saved so many people on September the 11th, 2012. He has a brand new book out, The Ranger Way. Hamidi Jassim is with us, author of The Terrorist Whisperer, the story of the pro-American trusted intelligence asset, fought Islamic terrorism all his life in Iraq. And Hamidi was the first Iraqi to be certified as an anti-terrorism and first protection expert and certificate recipient, and as an expert on anti-terrorism. Welcome, both of you. We appreciate you being here. Let me start with the unmasking issue. By the way, are you hungover like the last time you were in my studio?
No, I'm good. I feel good, actually.
The last time you came in the studio, you had no sleep.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The last time you came in the studio, you told me you had no sleep, that you were out partying like a crazy man all night.
I was not partying. I was in the gym all night working out. And it didn't reflect that when I walked in?
And what were you drinking in the gym?
Water. Yeah. Some clear liquid. That had a little brownish.
Why do I feel like you and I were brothers in a different life? I mean, we are so remarkably the same. It's crazy.
Thanks for that picture. You choking me out too. That went viral. I really
did it go viral.
Oh yeah, it was great. Thank you.
Oh boy, it gives me a bad. It actually gives me a truthful image because that's how I am in real life, messing around all the time. All right, but let me ask you. I mean, when you talk about unmasking an intelligence, when you talk about leaking intelligence, when you talk about maybe weaponizing the intelligence community for political purposes, how scary is that?
You're giving them, they're untouchable, is what you're saying right now. You're saying, and believe me, I have no love for the former CIA director, Brennan. I don't think he did us right as well with the Benghazi incident. But it gives them carte blanche to do what they want. You don't spy on Americans. And what were we doing? Were we putting more emphasis on spying on Americans because of a campaign? Are we trying to get intel from our enemies so we can go and kill terrorists? It just where does our priorities lie? And with Brennan and with the other Democrats out there, liberals, with this unmasking, for a political party, it's disturbing. And it is un-American, and it's something that we need to stand up and hold them accountable for. And I think President Trump could do that. But I know he's got his hands full right now. But it's one of the things that needs to happen. And same with Mike Pompeo over there, the CIA director.
Hamidi, you understand intelligence. Obviously, your years. I mean, you fought Islamic terrorism all your life. And, you know, on top of that, you were the first Iraqi certified as an anti-terrorism and first protector. And so you know how sophisticated our intelligence gathering is. How dangerous is it if our intelligence community, or just a few, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but a couple of unsavory characters use it for nefarious purposes?
Just like as Chris mentioned earlier, that we needed to stop concentrating on Americans and concentrate on the real enemy that's making a huge threat to the United States. ISIS and the Islamic State right now is the biggest threat to the United States, and we're not concentrating on what they're doing. You know, talking about the Manchester attack, this was an example to show you that fighting ISIS in Iraq and Syria is a lot different than fighting in your own homeland. We are not collecting enough information. ISIS recruiters are all over our communities, recruiting young children between the age of 17 years old to 22 years old. And what are we doing to stop these kind of recruiting processes? This is an example showing you that what happened in the UK, that we do not have any type of collected intelligence when it comes to the enemy. So I do agree with Chris that we need to stop concentrating on Americans, and we need to take a look at the real enemy that is closer to us right now. And this is ISIS and the Islamic State is a very different organization than Al-Qaeda. These guys are concentrating on the longevity of their organization. They are not looking just to take a building in New York City anymore. They're looking to be in our country for 50 to 100 years from now. And what are we doing to collect intelligence on our enemy? And that's an example to show you what happened in the UK, that we do not have any intelligence. We do not have any process to collect intelligence or have any intelligence sources within our enemy communities or within our own homeland. And that is even more dangerous than fighting ISIS in their own territories.
All right, stay right there, both of you. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this and How can they be advancing a theory that there's no evidence for, as we played that montage again? 800-941-SEAN. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program as we continue with Chris Tanto-Paranto, one of the Benghazi heroes, and Ahmadi Jassim is with us. You wrote The Ranger Way. I want to be a ranger. You told me last time you wouldn't have me as a ranger. What's up with that?
I don't. When did I say that? You're putting words in my mouth.
I said I'm too strong and that I choked you out and that you couldn't handle it and that I was way too powerful.
That's exactly. Well, there you go, right there. That's why. You know what? We're going to go at it again when we're done here.
Promise,
right here on the floor.
What happened? That didn't work out from the last time we went at it. I mean, I don't know.
You're killing me. I can't. Why don't even?
But what is the ranger way? I mean, you teach people how to be a ranger.
No. It's you know.
What is the ranger way?
There are so many books out there that you know, military books that show how to be a SEAL, how to be a ranger, a lot of it has to do with that military side, and you can't do that. You can't just. This needs to apply to everybody within the civilian world, and everybody in the military world, because we're all the same. We're nothing special. It's only thing about me than anybody else, but it's about persevering. It's about never quitting. It's about hitting an obstacle and not stopping, which our young continue to do because of the snowflake generation, the participation trophies. We're getting weaker as a society, and the Ranger Way is about being able to fail, pick yourself back up, and succeed. Never stop. You never quit.
Nobody ever escapes life, do they?
No, you can't.
You know, people have been talking to me recently, Hannity, you're under fire. Hannity, you're under fire. I'm like, and nobody escapes life. That's life. Welcome to my life.
You take the brunt of it, and you're a winner, 100%. And you drive on through. It's an obstacle.
And if you can't do it, you can't live life. And all right, let me go to Hamadi. Tell me about your book, The Terrorist Whisperer, the story of being a pro-American trusted intelligence asset in Iraq.
You know, I was just honored to say as many American soldiers that I can in Iraq during my work in Iraq. I was recruited by the U.S. intelligence in 2005 as an intelligent asset. I just happened to be working at a vital location in Iraq at the time, and it happens to be the same building where Al-Qaeda leadership and Islamic State leadership was operating in the same building. I was honored to be in the U.S. side to fight against these terrorist organizations to be able to eliminate their threats against our U.S. soldiers in Iraq. My job was to protect these Americans of all costs and get them home as much as I can. And the difference was, as I was born and raised there, I understand the language. Iraq was the kind of country at the time that didn't have any digital database, so there was no way for you to know who is who unless you know them by face and know a little bit about their background. And something that the U.S. intelligence were lacking in Iraq at the time, it was street-level intelligence. And that was the reason why they couldn't have it, because we didn't have any digital database. And my job was to get them intelligent information that the American intelligence couldn't get or didn't have any access to. So battling them in the intelligent level was just a different kind of fight. I would stand about 5 feet to a terrorist to know their activities, to know what they're up to. And the whole point is to know what their next step is. So that way, American lives does not have to be taken and no Americans get harmed.
All right, I got to let you both go. Great books. We put them both on Hannity.com, even Chris Tanto-Paranto's book.
So much love when I walk in this room, always.
There's the ton of love. I love you to death. What are you talking about?
You're whatever you need from me, brother. You know that, especially with those crazies over on the left. You just give me the word.
I'm at peace. Don't worry.
Roger
I'm good. All right, rock and roll. Thank you. Quick break. Right back. When we continue, we're going to check in with Karen Vaughn. She is the mother of a fallen SEAL, Aaron Vaughn, and we're going to talk about Memorial Day weekend. Then we're going to get to your calls in the next half hour. 800-941-SEAN. This Memorial Day, look, we're all going to go like we usually do. I take my long weekend at Memorial Day. We're all going to go. We're going to barbecue. We're going to hang with our families. I'm going to drink a lot of beer. I'm going to not tweet for 5 days, which will be a miracle if I make it. It's sort of like Linda. Linda started her Lent, and she gave up cursing. And Linda's not cursing lasted about 30 seconds. No, open your microphone. I'm not taking a shot. You have a chance to defend yourself.
I don't know if you know this, but Karen and I are friends. Whatever you say about me, she's going to defend me, not you.
Karen, I will.
But you should know that now.
Karen is laughing because she knows it's true. Karen, take a guess when she started giving up cursing for Lent, how long she was able to keep that promise to Jesus, God.
I'm thinking maybe 15 minutes.
Okay. You are a good friend. It was about 15 seconds.
It was about 30 seconds.
Okay, well, I tried.
And then finally I just said to her, well, you can't do it, so you might as well give it up. But we're gonna be out with our friends and our families. And look, I'm not saying you have to do any more. The one thing I just ask you is just stop a minute and you think about Memorial Day and you think about those that gave the sacrifice, so we can drink beer and we can hang out. And by the way, I was going to finish the thought. I'm not going to Twitter for 5 days. And Linda's looking at me. That's impossible. I'm going to try not to.
But we should start by saying you're not going to tweet for 5 days.
Yeah, tweet.
You're not
going
to Twitter. Twitter for 5 days.
Seriously? It's like if I misspell a word on Twitter because I'm in a rush.
If I can't pick on you, I'm going home. It's no fun for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is all about fun. It's not about working. It's not about dedication.
Working, some of us are having fun, and some of us are doing both.
All right. Anyway, so Karen Vaughn is with us, and it's people like her son. She is the mom of a fallen Navy SEAL hero, Aaron Vaughn. She's become a friend of mine. I love you dearly. I think the world of you.
I love you, too.
And she's joining us for this Memorial weekend. She has a new book, World Changer, A Mother's Story, and it's now out on Amazon.com. And, you know, one of the things that as I was flipping through the book, you learn how to raise strong kids in this very, very, a world of really weak people. That actually struck me.
Yeah,
because you know how many people have been contacting me. Sean, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
I loved it when I walked in here and said, I'm praying for you. And you're like, I'm fine. Because you know what, Sean, that's the kind of people we've got to be in this world, right? It is a world of dog eat dog, right? It's a brutal place
yes.
out there. But we have somehow managed to raise a generation of children who can't seem to cope with anything. And so we're watching them progress into the workplace and into positions of leadership across the country. And what I wanted to do with this book is I realized way back, if you'll just give me a second to tell this, you know, I thought, I've got a story to tell. I've raised three incredible children. One of them sacrificed his life, moved to the pinnacle of special warfare, you know, SEAL Team 6 Gold Squadron, you know, as high as you can get in warfare. Another one is a worship pastor. Another one is 24 years old, and she lost her brother when she was 18 years old. And 7 weeks later, she lost her boyfriend of 2 years in a car accident. And you know what, Sean? She's still on her feet. You know why? Because we freaking raised strong children. We taught them how to be independent. We taught them that failure was okay, that you get back on your feet, that you fight for things you want, that you push and push and push and push. And that's how you prove to yourself what you're capable of, right?
You know, I thought that, and you know, one of the reasons, I mean, for anybody to become a Navy SEAL, and I have a lot of friends that are Navy SEALs, they told me the process, it's so hard,
right.
So many people don't make it. You know, I see where your son got his strength, and that's what I'm just saying to people, just remember these people that gave their all and gave their lives so we can barbecue.
Right.
I bet your son would love to be with you and drink beer with you,
right.
And you wish he was with you.
I do.
And you'd like to open the beer for him and tell him you love him.
I would.
And he'd love to hug his mother. And he gave his life for us,
right.
So that we can enjoy that holiday. And if we don't remember and appreciate it, there's something to me just wrong about that.
It's true. And we need to make sure as a culture in this country that we pass on to generations that come behind us how important it is to remember and honor the sacrifice that has given us freedom. Because we live in the most amazing, amazing country on the planet. We have. People have asked me before, was America worth it? It was a hard question for me to ask at first. But, Sean, you know, I reconciled with myself with that question. And I said, yes, absolutely. America was worth it. Because this is, look around. You talk to people in Sudan who get arrested for converting to Christianity. People just have no concept what it looks like to not be free. And so, yeah, you know, we need to raise. And also what this book, World Changer, does, Sean, is my goal is to repatriate America's youth. I am hell-bent on repatriating America's youth, to give them something to believe in that's greater than themselves, something they fight for instead of themselves, you know, caring about someone else more than themselves, because that's what made us
so funny.
The most amazing nation on earth.
You sound like me talking to my son. You know, it's not about you. You know, at some
right.
point, you know, you get a lot. You got to give back a little. And that's
right.
what I say to him. And he's a good kid. Don't misunderstand me. You know, I said this last night in another context, and I look at you, and I've gotten to know you, and I think the world of you. And I always try to put myself in the position of somebody like yourself.
Right.
And I see how strong you are. And I'm assuming that probably writing this book was somewhat cathartic, strengthening and empowering for you? I know you. Am I right?
It was amazing. I got to do is recall so many hilarious stories of Aaron's youth. You know, things that, you know, Aaron left behind two children, a 2-year-old and a 9-week-old. So,
How old are they now?
They're 7 and 5 now. Wow. And, you know, I want them to know these things. I want them to know that their daddy was so brave that when he was 8 years old and weighed 80 pounds soaking wet, he punched a cow in the face to keep it from charging.
Oh.
You know, but those are the kind of things too, Sean, that we're talking about that build strong kids. His father put him in the position where he could prove to himself that he could punch a cow in the face instead of running over.
I try to put myself in your position.
Yeah.
And all that you've been through and losing your son, you're so proud of him. He's a Navy SEAL. He fights for his country. And then that call comes.
Yeah.
And your life is forever changed. Now, you may think that, you know, I am strong in every aspect of my life. I got 2 weaknesses. I don't like funerals.
Yeah.
All right. There's some cognitive disconnect. I don't like to deal with it. And the second thing is I don't think I could be as strong as you. I don't think I could be as tough as you. I think that would be the one thing in my life that would collapse me.
Well, I thought the same thing about myself until I had to live it, because it wouldn't, Sean, because you know why? Because I just believe that, you know, Aaron's life had a purpose. And I've learned and embraced the fact that Aaron's death has also had a purpose. And that's not an easy thing to say, of course, you know, but it's right. I mean, none of us.
How long did it take to really get where you are today?
To get where I am today, probably yesterday.
Yeah. Well,
but,
I understand.
No,
by the way, I have an ability. I know that's true. And I've also known you over the years.
Yeah.
And you've been strong every time I've seen you. But I just think it's the hardest thing in life, what you've gone through.
There can't be anything worse. I can't imagine anything worse except losing more than one child. You know, that's the only thing I can imagine worse. And I know plenty of people who have done that, you know. But what I like to do is I kind of like to use my story to help people keep their lives in perspective, Sean, because things that will pass, right? There's some things that can never be corrected. And if we focus our lives and our goals on those things that can be corrected and don't let them sidetrack us, you know, there's some things that are final, Sean. When a child dies, it's final. But these trials that we're going through, they're not final, you know.
It's so funny you say all that. You know, I don't think I was ever more, in a way, embarrassed in my life than the times that we did these concert tours for the military years ago, and I went to Bethesda and Walter Reed, and I go into the hospital, and you see these guys, you know, their legs blown off, their arms blown off, their faces blown to smithereens, and the suffering for months and months and years in some cases, and I'd walk out of there, and I'm, like, embarrassed. Because I think, I have problems.
Yeah.
I don't have problems.
Yeah.
I don't have problems compared to them or compared to what you went through.
That's because you have a healthy perspective. And see, that's just another thing we need to do in the society. Breaking perspective, Sean. You know, like you've got, like
I've
got.
You mean like not every kid gets a trophy?
That's right.
Because it hurts their little feelings?
It hurts their little feelings. And what are we saying to the kid that deserves the trophy? Don't try anymore. It means nothing to
try. As if they don't keep score, right?
Right.
Like, well, Karen Vaughn, we love you on the show. I love you personally. You're a wonderful woman. The book is phenomenal. It's called World Changer, A Mother's Story. And she, of course, lost her son, Aaron, a Navy SEAL, fallen. And he's one of the people I hope you'll remember on this Memorial Day weekend, as you rightly. They would want you to celebrate with your family. But I just want you to remember them, because their sacrifice enables that moment for you. Good to see you. Thank you for being with us.
Sean. You are loved by this family.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you.
Across Greater Manchester, we'll have seen a significant increase in the number of armed officers on mobile patrol and at static points across the city. We have been supported by forces from across the northwest and beyond, and this forms part of our well tried and tested plans for any major terrorist attack. I think it's very clear that this is a network that we are investigating, and as I've said, it continues at a pace. There's extensive investigations going on and activity taking place across Greater Manchester as we speak.
News that we're getting from the Manchester police this morning, the statements that they're putting out of mothers that they found who are still looking for their daughters and daughters that they found who are still looking for their mothers, and they can't find the rest of their families. And I think that's what is making Europe is getting used to attacks like this, Mika. We have to, because we are never going to be able to totally wipe this out. As ISIS gets squeezed in Syria and Iraq, we're going to see more of these kinds of attacks taking place in Europe, and Europe is starting to get used to that. None of us are used to having children targeted in this way, young girls targeted in this way.
Which is, having spoken to the mayor of New York,
our people, his office, our people having spoken to the police here, the advice we've received is 29 people have been injured. There are my thoughts and prayers. The advice we've received from the police service here and from the mayor's office is to carry on business as usual. I'm not going to speculate as to who was responsible. I'm not going to speculate as to how the police in New York should react. What I do know is part and parcel of living in a great global city is you've got to be prepared for these things. You've got to be vigilant. You've got to support the police doing an incredibly hard job. You've got to support the security services. And I think speculating when you don't know the facts is unwise.
All right, news roundup and information overload hour here on the Sean Hannity Show. You know, I usually like to start with a little bit of humor when we bring the gobby one. Our friend Katie Hopkins of the Daily Mail, but I've got to start on a very serious note because we love our friends in Great Britain. We love our friends in Manchester, and our thoughts and prayers are with our family there. And Katie, we consider you family and all of your countrymen and women, and I'm very, very sorry, and our thoughts and prayers go out to all of you in this very hard time.
Well, that's so kind, and you could almost set me off again listening to you. I have to go, no, don't pull yourself together, because it certainly has been here a time of just feeling flawed, I think, this time. Other times, I think I've seen the rest of people saying, we will carry on, we're going to make cups of tea, you know, people filming themselves walking to work or crossing a bridge, people making signs on the subway saying, we're British, we'll carry on, we'll have a cup of tea. This time, it's different. This is really different. It is not business as usual. It is not carry on as normal. We feel dramatically different, and it's because I think this is an attack on our children, because we have the pictures of little Safi Rose, who's 8, the youngest person that we know of to die, 67 injured, 16 still critical in the children's unit, and then the news desk from dailymail.com. The team went home yesterday, some of them in tears, because of the amount of material they had to read and sift through to get the news out to people, and stuff obviously that is too awful to share, but they had to read. I mean, I just think I've had emails all day, Sean, from mums up and down the country, because our political leaders are saying, we stand strong, we will not let terrorists win. But mums are saying, and dads are saying, I'm scared, I don't want my children going out, I will not let my child go on a school trip, I'm frightened. And they can't understand why leaders aren't acknowledging that there is now real fear when we're told an attack, the next attack is imminent, but we don't know where or when.
Well, I think the parents are frankly cautious and smart and not overreactive, as some may say. I think they're realistic, because there's something so insidiously dark and evil about radical Islamic terrorists that, and I don't know what the average age of the average listener to Ariana Grande is, but from what I understand, it's, you know, kids from like 5 and 6 years old all the way up to 18 to 20. And so this was really the targeting of young kids, more specifically young women, young girls, and with as much shrapnel to maximize the carnage and damage as possible. And I shuddered to think what would have happened if this ever got inside of that stadium.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Sean. It's that this is an attack based and, deliberately targeting little girls. So you're completely correct. 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, you know, some of these children, they were given these tickets as Christmas presents. This was their big moment, the first concert. And lots of mums with them, two of the mums that died, their daughters lived because they were just ahead of them in the foyer. The two mums were slaughtered where they stood. So those two little girls both lost their mums. There's another mum, for example, the mum of little Safi that died, the 8-year-old. The mum is still in a coma right now. She doesn't know her daughter's died. And I think it's things like that, Sean, where if I was that mum, you know, wishing that lady every best in the world that I can, if I was that mum, I know I would not want to wake up, because it would be easier to be dead than to know the truth that someone killed my daughter, their little girl. And so I think it's that, and certainly my children, you know, we were at breakfast when this news was out. I'd been upset. They saw I was upset. They wanted to know what. They heard the news. And my daughter, Poppy, she's 11. She said, but why would the man put nails and bolts in his bomb? Why did he put nails and why is that a bomb? And I was explaining that they do it to cause maximum slaughter.
Maximum carnage, maximum injury, maximum You know, well, I mean, it's just it. Look, I just have a very hard time at this late hour and date understanding how the left in Europe in particular. I mean, this is what Brexit and many reasons for Brexit. But this is one of the top reasons, because with the influx of immigrants into Europe, if you get into Germany, if you get into France, if you get into Belgium, it doesn't matter. You're in the European Union. And that means you can go at will to Great Britain. And Great Britain has no control over its own borders and destiny at that point. Now,
no, it's not even, you know, Sean, that's a perfect point. And it's very true. We have no respect for borders here. And we have our minds closed to what can happen when you just let people in. But it's more, you know, it's more distressing, I think, for Brexiteers like myself, because we know, the intelligence services know, that this guy, the guy that blew himself up, went out to Libya very recently. He's only just returned, I believe, last week. And during his trip, he's also thought to have gone to Syria. So it's the fact that we're willingly allowing jihadis, 650 of them are back into the UK. Why would we ever do that? And then the numbers that we know of the jihadis roaming the streets still at large is 3,000. I think what we need here is action. What people are saying is we will be united. We want to be united by action. What we have at the moment is a response. Reaction. We have 3,600 armed forces personnel onto our streets now with their weapons. But what we haven't got is action. I think what people would love to have seen was these 3,000 jihadis rounded up and at least isolated for a time while we try to get some sort of semblance of order in this country. And what we also have, Sean, as you'll know from your own experiences in America, loosely, but not as bad as here, is the police officer, the head of the Greater Manchester Police, came straight out after the attack and said, we will not tolerate hate against any of these communities. And I think there's a big kind of feeling here in the UK that, okay, we will tolerate the slaughter of eight-year-olds, but we will not tolerate hate against these people. And it feels very much to a lot of people that I've been speaking to today that we have gone out of our way to protect the human rights of jihadis, and we have failed to protect the right to life for our children.
Now, stay right there. Katie Hopkins, the ever-so-gobby one from Great Britain and the Daily Mail.
What's going on? Oh, my God!
Which way? Come on. Come on, let's get round. Come on, get round this way. Come on.
Across Greater Manchester, we'll have seen a significant increase in the number of armed officers on mobile patrol and at static points across the city. We have been supported by forces from across the northwest and beyond, and this forms part of our well-tried and tested plans for any major terrorist attack. I think it's very clear that this is a network that we are investigating, and as I've said, it continues at a pace. There's extensive investigations going on and activity taking place across Greater Manchester as we speak.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show News Roundup, information overload, wide open phones in the next hour, and we'll get to that. This is My Friday, but we'll maybe do a little Florida-Georgia Line Friday concert series, special Wednesday edition. Now, we do have some news on what happened in Manchester. The bomber apparently wasn't the only member of the family to harbor these extremist views, as Libyan officials arrested the suicide bomber's father and two brothers and apparently uncovered a plot for a new attack. What can you tell us, the gobby one, Katie Hopkins, about this?
Well, I mean, we can say that earlier the father was saying that his son was innocent, that his son would never do something like this. This is the son that carried the bomb into the arena that went off in the foyer. And then we know that the other son in Libya was arrested. Whilst the father was talking, doing an interview live on air, masked men came from the security forces and arrested the father as well. So he's under arrest, as is the son. There's another son still back in the UK. I spoke to one of my colleagues about this and said, look, you know, his father's saying he's innocent, and my colleague rightfully said, well, which bit? What, the thumb near the doorway or the head or whatever? Because he's now exploded into 1,000 pieces. But certainly I think what we've seen here is a family that are Libyan refugees. They came to the UK from Libya, and as with so many of the Libyan population, when they got here, they went to a more kind of fervent form of their religion, a more extreme form of their religion. Some neighbors have said that they saw him with a black flag, the flag of ISIS, flying out of his top window in his bedroom. Others say that he was walking up and down the street ranting about the Quran. Two of his friends reported him to the police because he said being a suicide bomber was a noble profession. So it does start to link up. That makes you say, how on earth was it at a time that we've been living through for the last 10 years, 5 years, certainly, last two, certainly, how on earth is that man still walking free? How was he still able to walk free when so many things were against him? When other people, people like you or me, or people that speak out and say we need action, are investigated for a rogue tweet. It seems perverse how some are still allowed to go free, even when so many signs of them being a terrorist are available and even being reported by members of the public.
Katie Hopkins, I think it is an admonition. And I think, as the president said in his incredible speech in Saudi Arabia, when he just laid it all out, kick them out, get them out of here. Get them out of your places of worship.
It's true.
He said, drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your country. Drive them into the ground. And if we don't, as good people, unite, we are going to regret it.
I think this is the thing, is what we're suffering from, is that we don't have what you have. We don't have President Trump. When that door to number 10 opens, I don't have a man saying, we will make America safe. We will make Britain safe. This will never happen again. We will get rid of these people. We haven't got that man. We've got people telling us still, you know, we stand united. And as the sound of 6,000 marching boots marches into London, they just say it louder to drown out the noise of the military. They say, we stand stronger, you know, as 67 of our children are still in hospital or injured or maimed or dead. No, we don't stand stronger. We don't stand stronger when someone's got their leg blown off. And they say it's business as usual. Even as our city, our country goes into lockdown, 1,000 troops at Buckingham Palace, a House of Commons shut down, no more changing of the guard, and they still stand there and say, we're carrying on as normal. And I think that gulf between reality and what they are trying to feed us as a narrative is now too wide, and people are starting to get restless in that middle ground where there's a vacuum of truth.
All right, Katie Hopkins, the gobby one with the dailymail.com. Our thoughts and prayers go out to our friends in Great Britain, and thank you for being with us. And I like it better when I can make you joke, but today,
know,
obviously, is
too.
Not the day.
I look forward to shaving my legs. I'm thinking of you.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Checkmate. I'm having a hard time getting that out of my mind. All right. We love Katie Hopkins, the gobby one, and we'll get to back to her, hopefully more humor next week. All right. Hannity Tonight. Don't miss my opening monologue. Somebody needs to take this on. The big Russia collusion, Trump collusion, narrative, conspiracy lie. That's what we're going to call it. That's what it is. Newt Gingrich weighs in. The president's successful first foreign trip abroad. Also, much more with Newt Gingrich, the president's economic plan. Not a lot of days on the congressional calendar. Why we need extreme vetting in light of Manchester. And also, President Trump's budget and the left-wing fear-mongering. We'll get into that. Typical, predictable. Austin Goolsbee, Maria Bartiromo. Our fake news roundup. Herman Cain joins us. Say EDVR, 10 Eastern tonight, Hannity on Fox News. Quick break. Your calls are next. All right. Well, it's my Friday. I don't know. Can we do it? Can we get myself? This is solely and completely for me. And that is our, well, Wednesday edition of our Friday concert series, Friday Florida Georgia Line concert series, as we take off of the Memorial Day weekend. Look, I just hope that you will know one thing. When we go, and I always take off this long weekend, as many of you do, and I know you're going to be going away. What do we do on Memorial Day? We remember. Now, I know Obama didn't know the difference in terms of Memorial Day. I see some of you out there this Memorial Day. Those fought and given the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives for all of us. That's what Memorial Day is.
Originally, Memorial Day, as our nation honors its unbroken line of fallen heroes, and I see many of them in the audience here today.
I see them out in the audience, the dead people, the soldiers that gave their lives for their country. You know, I'll give you a little history of it if you're interested. Memorial Day, originally called Decoration Day, is a remembrance of those that died in the service of this great country. Two dozen cities, towns claim to be the birthplace of Memorial Day. And if you want some background, but regardless of the exact date, Memorial Day is born out of the Civil War, a desire to honor those that gave their lives for others. It was officially proclaimed on May 5th, 1868 by General John Logan, National Commander of the Grand Army of the Republic, in his General Order No. 11. The 30th of May, 1868 is designed for the purpose of strewing with flowers and otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land, he proclaimed. The date of Decoration Day, as he called it, was chosen because it wasn't the anniversary of any particular battle. So if you take time this weekend and you're barbecuing and you're hanging with your friends and you're enjoying your families, which, by the way, we can do because so many did give the ultimate sacrifice for us, I hope you remember that, because as you get to put your hands up and shoot bullets at the moon as we head into Florida-Georgia line, it's because others gave us this liberty and freedom, and we honor them. Okay, all right, let's get to our busy phones, and let us say hi to Laura is in Marietta in California, where they have a 13.5% state income tax. Laura, how are you, and happy My Friday. What's going on?
Happy My Friday, Sean Hannity. It's nice to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to tell you that I support you, and I'm just proud of you for all the hard work you're doing for us conservatives.
You know, I've been inundated with support from friends and listeners and Twitter family and viewers like I've never had before in my life. I got to tell you, it's very humbling to me, and it's very much appreciated. And you know, the fact that I am being honest, I'm telling you I'm under fire. I'm telling you that, you know, this attempted boycott is to get me off the air and get my voice silenced. I think it's directly related to my politics. I think it's directly related to wanting Fox News Channel to not be impactful anymore. And the same tactics that have been used to silence other conservatives and hurt other conservatives are now being used against me for no good reason except that I'm a conservative. And God forbid if I actually did something. So, you know, so I'm being honest. I appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers. But I also know that this is, you know, this is the life I have chosen. I understand the nature of this conflict. It's sad that the left doesn't believe in freedom of speech. It's sad that they want to silence opposition voices. I accept it. It's a reality. And I just want all of you to know for a reason. Because they want your voice silenced. I am only a representative of that. Because I can't make anybody watch my TV show. I can't make anybody listen to this radio show. I wish I could, but I can't. Kidding. And the fact that so many do bothers those on the left. And that's why I call it liberal fascism. Now, for those of you that were angry with me when I didn't support the boycott, the fire Steve Colbert, and the fire Bill Maher, I warned you, this is what they do to conservatives, and I don't see any liberal, not one, who's going to come to my defense and say, stop the boycott. Actually, there is one, and I'll tell you about it later, that said he's going to tweet out, and it's going to be interesting when it happens. All right, Laura, anything else you want to add, and what are you doing for the holiday?
What am I doing for the holiday? I'm going to have a barbecue, and I'm going to celebrate America, and I want to thank you for being a conservative voice for those of us who don't have the platform that you do, and I want to thank you for fighting for us and fighting for America, more importantly, and thank you, and I support you, and we support you.
Listen, it means so much to me, and I have been blessed beyond any measure. My career has gone on longer than I ever thought it would. I've always thought I was on borrowed time. I always thought I was going to get fired, and it never happened. It's an honor to have this microphone on any given day. I've never taken it for granted. Never. And I don't take it for granted today. And I just hope we can continue the fight and continue the battle for the things that we believe in. There's so much at stake. And I'll say this, anybody that is supportive of the president today, that believed in him, they're just, you got a massive bullseye on your head and your heart, and they want to take you out. And it's sad that liberal fascism is at this high level that it is today. You know, what did I always said on this program, Linda? I said all the time, Bill Maher's good for America. People look at me like, what are you, insane? He's not good for America. I'm like, yeah, he is. Because he says iconoclastic, politically incorrect things, and he gets away with it. And for those of us that believe in freedom of speech, we get to say, well, he says this. Why don't you go after him? Because what they really want to do is only silence conservatives. Liberals can say whatever they want. Bill Maher can make so-called jokes about Ivanka Trump, incest jokes. And Stephen Colbert can talk about male body parts in relation to the president. And I still, if I don't want to watch them, I hit the remote control button. I have an on and off button. I have a channel changer. I don't even have to leave my bed to change the channel.
Let's not forget Katie Reich on SNL, who made fun of the president's son and called him autistic, his youngest son, Barron. Let's not forget about Rosie O'Donnell, who compared him to an autistic
child. Horrible. Attacking a 10-year-old kid. Horrible.
This is a child who is now in the spotlight. It's not his call to be in the spotlight.
Listen, and this is why, you know, why do you think that these groups exist? How many years have I warned you on this program that every word, every statement, every hour of radio, every hour of TV is being recorded in the hopes that they get one word, one sentence, one phrase that they deem politically incorrect or they don't like, and then they could attack my advertisers? In this case, that didn't even happen. They got so frustrated waiting for me to screw up and not screwing up, they just decided to do it anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, you have compassion, so, you know. That's something that they don't have, so it's a problem for
them. Listen, I'm perfectly happy. I am perfectly at peace with who I am, my career, what I've done, the things I've said, and I have not backed down on anything. As I said, look, my investigation's not stopped at all. It's not gonna stop.
I think you're the most comfortable you've ever been in your life.
I'm at peace. I am.